From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and you know, this is a show about entrepreneurship. It's about building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. So we love small business people, entrepreneurs. They're the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks. They make the sacrifices. They figure out a way to change the world. And today on the show, we have an entrepreneur that I've known for, I don't know how long, Rob, you and I have known each other, but I think you came to hanging with Haney 5-10 years ago,
yeah. So
hanging out in a small group talking about entrepreneurship and how great yeah. we're going to be. And you always struck me as this guy that could figure it out, right? You're one of those guys that is going to figure it out. You've got this marketing background, but you're wearing your shirt that has a mantra of yours. Mm-hmm. And I guess, is this your secret to success? It's brains, balls, and hard work. If you have that combination, you can figure it out. Is that right?
Well, I feel like those three things have gotten me to where we are today and keep propelling myself and our company forward.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, and I think one day my mom said to me, yeah, I think you have more balls than brains. And I thought about it for a little bit, and I said, well, it's kind of a combination of the two, I think. And, you know, sometimes...
Your mom sounds like a tough cookie.
Yeah, she's a tough cookie, old Italian lady. Yeah. She's, she'll beat you with a broom.
So, imagine.
But, you know, I think that that combination has propelled us with new ideas, because you have to have an idea. You have to start with, you know, the brain has to say, oh, there's a need for this, or you know, what can I develop this into? And I think everybody has ideas, right? Like, there's so many ideas.
All right, we'll dive into that in a second. Let's make sure our audience gets to know you and this this creative business that you have built.
Okay.
Right here in Sacramento, but obviously you do business all over the place, but you have a retail storefront here in Sacramento,
right.
And but you have online presence as well, so you have, you've got customers all over the place.
We do.
Yeah, tell us about you, your journey into entrepreneurship, and then tell us a little bit about your business.
Sure. Well, kind of a serial entrepreneur since I was a young man. My father was an entrepreneur and made an incredible, successful business without much to start with. And he
was an immigrant Italy?
Yes, my parents are Italian immigrants, and my dad has an 11th grade education, but at the age of 21, became the youngest Texaco retailer in the country. He had his own gas station.
Wow.
With service
at 21?
21.
Wow.
1970. Yeah.
Because what's it cost to buy a Texaco franchise in 1970? I don't know, 20 grand?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
But he had Texaco behind him because of his good work and his diligence and his just acumen.
He probably can fix cars.
He could fix anything, and he could charm anyone, and the combination of the two things, you know, got him where he eventually ended up. And and I always was helping at the gas station and working with Dad, and my grandfather also was a blacksmith, and I would work with him, like old school Italian blacksmith, mm-hmm. right, and he pounding and forging the metal. And so that was always in my childhood background. So,
you know, I don't even know if I introduced your name. Rob DeFeo, EDC mm-hmm. Specialties is the name of his company. I just started getting into the conversation.
Yeah, we're just getting into it.
But go ahead and finish the story. But yep. I want to apologize for not introducing Rob first.
It's okay. We got right into it. It's good. Nonetheless, I grew up hard work. We worked hard. We you know, saved for what we wanted as kids. And as I started to study, I went into art. And I really wanted to do something different than what my family was doing. And my dad didn't want me to be a mechanic. And, you know, I was artistic. So I kind of got into commercial design. And as soon as I got out of college, somebody said to me, you got to go freelance. You got to do freelance. And this was before computers and everything had integrated itself fully into the design world, right? So there was still a lot of illustration and handwork, and you were a true artist. So I actually did that for a while, and I felt like, wow, I could do this, because I've always relied on myself to be able, you know, I'm a self-sufficient guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did go back and forth into a few professional environments, agencies, corporations, and I learned a lot from those experiences. But eventually, at a certain point in time, I either felt too constricted by the corporate entity or the rules or regulations of how I, you know, had to be creative, and felt like I could do it better myself. And always,
there's a lot of reasons why. Yeah. Don't you find there's a lot of reasons why people start businesses? Sometimes it's to, you know, get rich. Sometimes like they don't want to work for the man, but they want some freedom to figure it out.
Right.
I love that.
Right. But you got to have balls to do that.
Ah, without question. Yeah, right? It is not, it can be scary.
It can be very scary. And I've always, I'm not married and I don't have children. And so I've always just kind of been self-sufficient and
you weren't scared to get married.
No, no, I actually did get married for a while. I was married, but I've been single for a long time. And so I really have been concentrating on my business and doing what I do. And so over the years it's evolved and, you know, I try different things. I took my creative background and published an Italian American magazine. I founded and published a magazine because I had magazine experience. And when I came out to the West Coast, I found that there was a great Italian-American population here, but there was no publication or nowhere for them to showcase their family histories and things like that. So I developed the magazine, and it went to a national level and was very successful until 2008, 2009. People started pulling advertising, market crash, problems with, you know, couldn't spend money, didn't have to. And so, unfortunately, I had to do other things. And I just kept doing things. And in 2016, a friend of mine came to me and said, "Hey, my job's not cutting it. And I was wondering, you know, can I work with you? Is there anything I can do?" And I said, "Well, I've had this idea about a store that has things for your EDC, right?" Now, let me explain EDC. Mm-hmm. Everyday carry. Everyone has it. It's been here since early mankind. It's things that you don't leave home without, right? Yes. Maybe it's your keys. Today, many people, it's a phone. Many people, it's a special tool, a pocket knife, a wallet, whatever it is, you something, your shoes. It could be anything, right? But it's your EDC. And regardless of what environment you live in, urban, rural, jungle, doesn't matter, something, you need something to be prepared for whatever the day is going to bring you. So since I've always been into that, and I have, you know, a little thing by my bedside where I dump my pockets, put all the stuff out. It's all in one place. And I'm looking at it one day and I thought, I really had to get all this stuff at different places. There was no one place. And if it was, it would be a department store and not a specialty place, right?
So we're talking about like keychain. What else? What were you carrying in your pocket? A knife,
well,
I assume?
Some people do, right? I thought about that because that was a big thing. I'm like, wow, how do you figure out what people carry in their pockets? If you took 100 people off the street and dumped them upside down and took all the stuff, you'd have 100 different combinations of things.
Yeah.
Right?
So I have that in my... So when I leave, I have this little compartment, little area, you know, we recently built a house and I created a little area that I dump all my crap in. So I have my keys,
right.
I've got my wallet,
right.
And I've got my sunglasses,
right.
You know, those kind of the things that I've all, you know, I always take with me.
Right.
Other than that, I try to run
pretty light.
I do have a concealed weapons permit, but I usually don't bring the gun around.
Right. And so for an average American, those things are absolutely 100% commonplace.
Okay.
Sunglasses, keys, wallet. But I started to think about, like, what would the essentials be if you wanted to be safe, if you wanted to be prepared,
okay,
right? So let's break it down into some essential categories, because I can't have everything in the store. And another thing, from the day one, I wanted everything in the store to be American-made, 100% American-made. Not only is that something that sets us apart, but I know that I can get customer service. These are things people might depend their lives on, right? Mm-hmm. And if something goes wrong, I want the company who manufactured it to be accountable. And so we offer 100% lifetime warranty on everything in the store. We will refund or replace every item. It's just that good. So you're talking about things like a flashlight,
Okay.
A pen, a little multi-tool that, not a big, you know, Leatherman type tool, but a little thing that might do five or six different things, like open a box and open a bottle or a can, you know, maybe a little wrench for doing things once in a while. So these are commonplace items that people like to carry, even a tiny thing like that on your keychain. And you start putting together this matrix of stuff and start investigating other things like, oh, this is cool and this is neat. And then all of a sudden you have a wall full of stuff that people come in and go, oh, I never knew there was a little grappling hook that I could put on my keychain in case I ever, you know, lost something. And it's fun stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But it's also useful. And in many cases, necessary.
So, what's the bestseller? What you started off? When I first met you, I remember talking about knives specifically, and you know, people carrying knives. And I thought about that a little bit. I've really never carried a knife, but I know people that do. Mm-hmm. Is that a big percentage of your offering?
It is now, because it's the driving force of the business from a financial perspective.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Now, number one, I was the very first brick and mortar EDC store in the country. Okay. So no one had ever done this before. There was no blueprint for how to do it. You could find EDC websites that had all kinds of stuff, but there was no one place you could go to like have it in your hand. Okay. Because this stuff's expensive. Especially the American-made stuff.
And okay, so, yeah, a nice knife that somebody would carry.
Sure, or a nice flashlight. I mean, we're not talking about a flashlight that you pick up at the, Harbor Freight or something. We're talking about a flashlight that's $200, $300, $400, $500 for a small flashlight that goes in your pocket. But it does a bunch of things, super bright. You know, it's what you need when you need to save yourself and other things, right? So people are spending good money on good items. And my customer base started coming in and asking specifically for knife brands that I had never heard of. But I would investigate them. And that's how the whole thing is grown, is someone comes in and says, hey, do you carry so-and-so?
Well, okay, so I'm thinking about your customer base and trying to draw some kind of, I don't know, stereotype for that. I'm picturing people that survivalist, maybe. If you said a flashlight that could keep you safe, knives that are obviously could be, you know, handy for a lot of uses, but maybe protection as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that the type of client that is kind of like the bread and butter?
That type of client I do have.
Okay.
But on the higher end of that demographic. Okay. So a lot of guys who are preppers or survivalists love to shop online, and that's really not our niche, right? Because they find stuff from all over the world that fits their needs. So I've actually created a niche where we have very high-end products, especially the knives that we carry in our store. You can't find anywhere else. We own the market on high-end pocket knives for 200 miles in any direction.
What's the difference between a good pocket knife and a great pocket knife?
A good pocket knife, like a good standard USA-made factory pocket knife, is going to be made of a fairly good steel and have, you know, decent
lifetime
qualities
warranty
to it. Some of them
this?
Do, yeah. But when you get to a high-end pocket knife, machining tolerances go down to plus or minus zero at 0.001 of an inch. Handles are made of solid slabs of grade 5 titanium.
Oh.
Steel, blade steel, is now heat treated in its own individual Inconel bag, so it gets exactly the right heat treat.
They're more effective from a usage standpoint. They do a better job.
Yes.
They cut through things better.
They do. Their edge retention is better. Their durability is better. Their toughness is better. Their corrosion resistance is better. They last forever. The knife I have in my pocket right now, they'll dig up 2,000 years from now and say, what the hell were those things doing?
Oh.
Right? It's something that would just... will stand the test of time.
Okay, so I'm looking at this brand is a Rooster?
Nope, that's my name.
Oh, okay.
That is a Medford from Medford Knife and Tool, made in Phoenix, Arizona. And that's 100% hand sculpted.
Nice. And it's got a good feel to it.
Right. So you could drive that through a car door if you actually wanted to.
Here, I'll give it back to you. I don't know how to close it.
So something like this, you just don't really ever need anything else as far as a knife is concerned. This will never break. It will never do, you know. It just,
what's a knife like that cost?
$1,000.
Okay.
Yep. But meant to last forever, heirloom quality, pass it down generations. Yeah. And some guys collect these. I know guys who have 40 of them. And it's kind of one of those passions for high-end collecting, mm-hmm. like watches mm-hmm. and firearms and things like that. You might not need another watch, but you love that one. Mm-hmm. And you can afford it and you will buy it, right? And so that's where we're at with our higher-end knives. And then we have factory knives as well.
Okay. And then what's the, okay, so we got knives is a, yep. is a key product line.
Right.
Is flashlights a big component of the what you guys sell?
It is. Kind of going back to the demographic.
Yeah.
Not only survivalists and preppers, but now we're going to get into the guy who is just prepared for life occurrences in general, wants to be prepared for life occurrences. So maybe someone who likes to have everything. He might not need everything in a multi-tool, but if something goes wrong, he wants to be able to say, I have that. I have that tool on me. Okay. Maybe you're at the grocery store and something happens and someone is cut. Hey, I have a first aid kit on me.
Okay.
Okay. Anything could be like that. First aid is a big one. We sell a lot of first aid, and that's something we recommend everyone has. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a good first aid kit in your vehicle, you could be in trouble.
Yeah.
And that includes a tourniquet.
Oh.
If you're in an accident and you have arterial hemorrhaging, no one's going to save you in 2 minutes if you don't have a tourniquet. No one. But a tourniquet costs $35 for a good one, and it'll save your life or someone else's. Mm-hmm. And if you have that in your car and you roll up on an accident scene and you know how to use it, then being prepared pays off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And that goes for all of the things that we sell, flashlights and all that stuff.
Is it predominantly men, or are there women that, I know you have women clients, but mm-hmm. what percentage do you have in terms of women and men?
85% men. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then again, going back to the demographic, our third tier of customer base is law enforcement, military, firefighters, first responders of all sorts who need and want tools that are going to work for them.
Oh, they're using it in the field.
All the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's a work tool for these guys.
Exactly. Exactly. So even though, you know, this knife is more decorative, you know, a lot of these knives are working really hard. And I'll give you a great example. Played golf over the weekend with a firefighter who's been fighting the Park Fire. Mm. And he owns one of the knives that he bought from us. And he had to get up into a tree, and he had no other way to do it. He took his knife, jammed it about 2 inches into the tree trunk, you know, flat like this, mm-hmm. and stood on it to get up to the branch
to where he was going. It became like a little step for
him. It became a step for him. You're not going to do that with a factory knife that you purchased.
Yeah, my little Cub Scout knife's not going to hold me. Yeah.
Right. But for his work environment, that he needed that at that moment, and it came
that
through.
Held that knife, a knife like that, though, a heavy duty knife, can hold a 200-pound individual
absolutely with gear on,
jam, and it's sharp enough to stick it into the tree.
Yeah, I'm sure he had to pound it in with his axe or whatever, but
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty creative.
Oh, and one more quick story on that, just because it's a really good example. I have another customer who works for AAA, and he was first on scene at an Amazon rollover. Mm. The driver was stuck in the cab. Now, this knife has a glass breaker on the back. His knife has a glass breaker on the back, right? So he takes it, he breaks the window, the front windshield, opens the blade, cuts a man-size hole out of the windshield with this knife. Driver came out of the cab. He came back in our store the next day for sharpening. That was all it needed.
Wow.
Right.
Saved a life with the knife.
Yes. Right.
Wow.
So that's what we're talking about when we look at a tool that costs $500 to $900, you know?
Yeah.
And some guys are collecting them because they're beautiful, and some guys are making them work like hell. But either way, they're great. They're quality products.
Yeah. People, it sounds almost like a MacGyver story or something like that. These stories of how people creatively use their everyday tools to save lives and do incredible things.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other product that you have that I think has become really popular for you is something that I'm holding in my hand here. It's your everyday caddy tool, and you make these, and you put people's name on them. This one you put Haney Biz on. You brought it for me. Describe this everyday caddy tool for us.
Sure.
And why does the golfer need that in his golf club, his golf bag every day?
Or
I guess they carry it in the golf bag or the pocket.
Well, in your golf bag when you're not playing, but in your pocket when you're playing.
Okay.
Because it's like having a caddy at your fingertips, right? That's one of the things I say about this tool. I've been playing golf my entire life, and I've been caddying since I was a young boy. So when I started getting into tool development and actually designing and making tools, I thought to myself, for sure, I want to make a golf tool. And started out with a simple idea, developed it 3-4 times. And we now have a tool that I think does everything you need when you're on the golf course. And so starting at the top, it has a groove cleaner to clean the grooves of your clubs.
So this is this little, it's like 3 inches of metal, and it's got these prongs coming out of the bottom.
Yeah.
So it's probably about the size, it's probably about what, 4 inches long, three or
it
four
is.
Inches long?
Yep. 4 inches long, 3/4 inch
wide. For anybody that's listening to it on a podcast, you know, trying to describe the tool, and it's flat. It's probably
eighth inch.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
1/8 inch thick, made of grade 5 titanium, 304 stainless, or 7075 aerospace aluminum.
Okay.
This is an aluminum one, and it's anodized. We do anodizing in red, blue, black, purple, and they look great. And then we reserve this space here either for our logo in the center.
The face of the tool itself is
where you can put the
emblem. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I'll take it off the backer so we can see both sides, because the other side is a little bit more unique.
Okay.
So,
It's got some measurements on there, range estimator.
Yeah. So among the many things that this tool does is it's actually a range estimator, and it helps to range in your shot from about 125 yards in. And that works like
a
rifle
range
finder.
Yeah, like a rifle. Okay, yeah, you hold it up so you can kind of, that's interesting. Yep. Okay.
You hold it up, and depending upon how high the flagstick comes will tell you how far out you are.
Okay, is this a bottle opener here on this part? Is that what that is?
It'll open bottles, but it'll also pull tees out of the ground that are pushed in too far.
Okay, and then this is for like replacing divots and stuff? What is that for?
So on the green, when your ball hits the green, it'll leave a mark.
Right.
And we repair those marks with that little tool on the bottom. But also see where it says 1, 2, 3, 4 on there?
Yes.
So usually if you're in a foursome and you're on the first tee, you want to decide who goes first, right? Because there's no honors yet.
Okay.
So instead of throwing a tee up in the air like many people do, throw it up in the air and points to one, then they got to do it again and again. And maybe it doesn't even point to anybody. This, you throw it up in the air, and no matter what side it lands on, 1, 2, 3, 4. There's your foursome. There's your order.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Your tee off order.
That's cool.
Yep. The little hole that looks like it's I.
Yeah. Up at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you stick a tee in there and make like a little angle, you can put your phone on it like a selfie stand. See how that works right there?
Oh, okay, so it's a selfie stand, basically.
Because everybody likes to take,
well, you want to video your golf
video
swing,
your
potentially.
Swing.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Okay,
get
makes sense.
Get the group shot.
And, of course, made in America.
Made in the USA. So.
Now your business has grown. You're out in Rancho Cordova off Highway 50 and Sunrise, is that right?
Yes.
And you've expanded. You've got a retail side, and you've got a manufacturing side.
Correct.
Tell us about the business model and how you went from redistributing other people's stuff, which I think you still do, but now you're a manufacturer. That's got to be a big leap.
Well, it has been a big leap, and we're still developing that full business model. However, it's kind of gone through the process of as we developed a store, and then you start having this high-end product in, and a lot of people want to customize that stuff, right? So someone would say, hey, can I get my name engraved on that? And we didn't have a laser engraver, but we knew we needed one, right? Mm-hmm. So I found a means to get one. We got one, becomes a big part of the business. Then next thing, someone says, oh, can you anodize this titanium? We look it up. Yes, we can do it. Okay, figure out, buy the equipment, get it, we can do it. Now pair the two. And then it continued to develop to the point where we felt like we needed to dedicate its own space because it was overtaking the back area of the retail shop, right? Well, when that happens, it's once you have that space, it's like, okay, now we can put this over here and we can put this over here. And we start developing in our mind, like where this could go and piecing it in place by place. So for instance, with the caddy tool, the very first order I got was 1,000 pieces. And with that deposit money, I was able to buy the equipment I needed to blast it and do other parts of the process in-house. So it's one of those things where we're piecing it together as we go. But it's cool because they are complementary to each other. So when the retail store is really kicking, the manufacturing is off season.
Okay.
And then we can switch that around. Summertime, retail gets a little bit slower. We can crank tools out.
Mm-hmm. So I have to imagine some of your products lend themselves to gift giving at yes. some level, like Christmas or maybe even yes. Father's Day, potentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. And we like to be really creative with that stuff. So we do stockings filled with EDC gear, ready to hang, all wrapped and ready to go.
Oh, wow.
So someone can come in and they don't have to choose things, because gift giving is kind of tough, especially for our customer base who like mm-hmm. to buy things for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we pre-do that kind of thing. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds like the creativity, the brains coming into work there. But let's talk about hard work. So you got yeah. the brains. You got, obviously, it takes balls to expand, to launch a business,
yeah.
to make the decision to expand.
Yeah.
These are things that... you take a lot of courage. And so I think we have those now or never moments, and right. you are one of those people that says, I guess I'm going to do it now.
Right.
So congratulations on that. But
thank you.
Where does hard work really come in? Is that, because some people say work smart, don't work hard, work smart. Well, how would you respond to that?
Well, I always try to work smart, obviously. But I think that without putting in hard work, and that means those extra calls, the extra hours, this has to be done, I don't feel like doing it right now, but I'm going to do it. I mean, you can't outsmart that work.
Mm.
You have to do that work. I don't have a team of people that I can say, you go do this, and you be the Instagram guy, and you do this, and that just can't happen. So I have to manage my time properly and be able to say, okay, now I'm going to chase these sales calls, right? And you chase those sales calls for a couple hours, and then you say, okay, now I'm going to pivot over to this. And I might have to go in and grind tools at some point in time, or I might have to go and laser something. I'm jumping all over the place constantly. And that is hard work. But I think that if without a team of people and a resource portfolio that allows me to delegate a lot of that and pay for it, because you can't delegate it unless you can pay for it, this is the start of the business. I plan for, you know, EDC Specialties does fine, and it has grown every single year over year. So I feel like we have our market share established. We have our customer base established. Like, I'm not going to change that aspect of the business. However, the manufacturing end of things is just getting started. And I've put tens of thousands of dollars into machinery and into equipment and into blanks. I mean, there's, you know, thousands of blanks sitting around ready to go. So now that all the brains are exhausted and, you know, I'm out of balls, it's time to work hard, and I need to go out and get it done, no matter what that is.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you're at right now. So what's the longer term or the bigger vision for the company, and what's standing in the way other than hard work?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely have a vision. Our number one thing right now is I'd like to get to the PGA show in January. I'm working hard to get a booth there if I can get that exposure.
Sell your golf item there.
That's correct. So here's the thing. That is my focus right now, Mark. And I'll tell you why. I've got three pros playing with it. They absolutely love it. Everybody who looks at that tool and understands it and uses it absolutely loves it. It's different than anything on the market. It's more unique. It's American made and it's affordable. It's a $20 tool. People spend so much money on their golf game. Mm-hmm. A $20 tool that can be in your pocket and do anything you want during the round.
Oh, you know what? I'll give this to my brother. We were talking before the show that my brother, somebody just sent me an Instagram thing that, you know, he won some tournament, but I think he's ranked number one at Catavadera.
Awesome.
We sold our companies 10 or 12 years ago. He became a great golfer. Yeah. I suck, but he's good. So I'll give
this
to him.
That would be great. Absolutely. And we'll see how he likes it.
Yeah. So you're going to get to the PGA tour and have a booth and get this. Hopefully what? What's the goal there?
Well, the goal would be twofold. Number one, our market right now, I need to get to distributors. I need equipment distributors, mm-hmm. right? And I need to get in as many pro shops as I can. There's 900 pro shops in California alone, thousands and thousands across the nation. I need to get in every golf retail store. I need to get in every fitting place. I want to be everywhere where golfers are spending money. Mm-hmm. And I want them to see that tool. We have pro shop displays that are already set up. We have packages that they can buy. We have... All I need right now is the relationships. I need to have the tools get into the hands of these people who make decisions. And I'm working on that, but it's a long process when you're doing all the other things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hopefully at the PGA show, the exposure for guys to come by, hey, what's this? Hey, let me show you how it works. Great. You want to buy them for your golf club, for your pro shop? I'll put your club logo on there, you know, and if I can make some sales there, great. If I catch the eye of someone bigger there who says...
Somebody owns a lot of, let's say, Dick's Sporting Goods or something.
Absolutely. Or what if Callaway or Titleist says, mm-hmm. we love it, we want to buy it. Mm-hmm. We want to do something, right? I have to come talk to you because I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to help you with anything like that. But have you protected the design of this at all?
We have a trademark.
Okay.
But I have gone back and forth on patent. I feel... as though the advice that I've gotten all leans toward make as much money as you can, as fast as you can with mm-hmm. it, because it's going to get ripped off anyway, no matter what.
And be first to market. Yeah,
be first to market. I'm not putting it on Amazon and I'm not putting it on eBay because it'll be gone in a second. The design will be ripped off by, you know, people outside of our control.
Gotcha.
So I feel like if I can sell a few hundred thousand tools before that happens, then, you know, I can have the original design and maybe it's worth patenting at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And if there's a better way to do that, please enlighten me. I don't know. This is the first
time. These are judgment calls that I think a lot of us make is when to, you know, how much to spend on protecting your design when people copy it anyway. And, mm-hmm. you know, that, I mean, I think it's a great question because people will copy your design. And if you don't have the wherewithal to do something about it, mm-hmm. Then, you know, what are you going to do? Just go suing people? I got a small business. I got a business to run. I don't have time and resources to go, going after the people in China.
Well yeah.
Which you can't, really.
You can't, really, right? So how do you even do that? It's a waste of resources. And, you know, if they got it for $2 on Amazon, then it's over for me. So mm-hmm. So I think that I just want to work hard to do my very best to get it out there and be first to market, generate a few million dollars in sales over the next couple of years, and, you know, see if I can maybe get it in somebody's hands who can take it from there, go nationwide. I'm not afraid to do that. I got more mm-hmm. more ideas to develop. Mm-hmm. I have more things to do. So
that's exciting. Any advice for the wantrepreneur, right? There's a lot of people that look at this type of business or they've got good ideas, but... not sure they have the brains, not sure they have the balls yet, but hard work, they're not afraid of hard work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people like that. I'm not.
Definitely.
They're out working everybody yep. in their, you know, at the job that they have, yep. but, you know, they're not sure how good their idea is right. and, you know, they're not sure they have the courage, yep. right. you know, to go for it, to take the leap.
That's a great question. I understand that from the very perspective of there are so many great ideas out there that reside in people's minds and have never made it past that. So I think if you have an idea, like somehow put it on paper, somehow put it in a way that someone else can look at it and see and get some feedback. And you'll know shortly whether it's a good idea or not. Do you get the eye rolls mm-hmm. or do you get the holy cow, this is really cool? And I think a lot of people are happy to give you advice and, you know, and say, well, you know, I think you should do this. And I always try to take that advice. As a matter of fact, the little leather slip there, one of the very few times that someone has given me a challenge on the golf tool was a pro said, well, his edges are too sharp. Mm. I'll go in my pocket. I said, no problem. We fix that.
Little leather carrying case.
Little leather carrying case. Perfect, right? That's awesome. We can resolve the issue. So if you have a great idea, show it to people you trust and get feedback. And if it starts to feel like you're getting a little traction, then, you know, if you don't have the balls to go after it, then find someone who does.
Yeah.
And say, look, I think this might work. How can we do this together? Because you can't do everything alone. There's no way I could be here. And I do want to give a shout out to my partner, Greg, who has been, he's more than a partner. He's my brother at this point. Like we are actually, we joke that we share two halves of the same brain because he knows what I'm doing and thinking and the same. And he's also very mechanically based. He has a lot of machining background. So when I have this idea and I say, oh, I want to make this golf tool, Greg, and I want it to do this and this and this, he can say, all right, cool. Well, the machine has to do this and we have to do this. And how does that happen? So big shout out to Greg because he's half of, you know, what we do. And also Marine Corps veteran. So
your partner's a Marine Corps veteran?
Yeah.
Were you in the military?
No, I'm civilian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank him for his service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about business partners, and one of my mantras is nobody builds a truly great company alone. And mm-hmm. my brother was my business partner for several years. And there's nothing like having a workplace soulmate, somebody mm-hmm. who understands you, gets you for who yeah. you are, can make up for your weaknesses. They've got the strengths yes. where you don't have. And I have yes. that with my business partners at the Growth Factory today. We're developing into soulmates of a certain kind. So yeah. those are so important. It's kind of what makes it fun yeah. to build a business. If you're in business with yeah. the right people, even the tough times are worth fighting through.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So if you don't have the balls to go for it yourself and you got somebody who can help you with that, go for it. I just always think it's going to take hard work one way or another, unless you just have the idea and you sell it to somebody and you get your money and you're good.
Well, I don't know if that, I don't hear that many stories of that.
I don't know either.
I think you have the right combination, Rob. Brains, balls, of course, and there's, you know, hard work will not hurt you. That's one of the things I tell my grandkids, and it's essential if you want to be successful in life. You've got to be willing to roll up your sleeves and work hard. So congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
I hope you get to the PTA or PGA event and just kill it. Knock 'em dead, man.
Thank you. We're going to do it, Mark.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks for so much for having me today.
Gotcha. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you, we're never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.